The views and opinions expressed in this show do not represent those of Hutton Broadcasting or its employees.
This is Daniel Cobb, Dr. of Oriental Medicine, and welcome to my radio show, Natural Medicine. I've been a Dr. of Oriental Medicine for about 10 years, published articles in Wellbeing Journal, Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine, and the Foundation for Alternative and Integrative Medicine on their website. I've also, for the previous 4 years, taught anatomy as physiology at various professional schools around Santa Fe and Albuquerque. Today in the studio with me, again, is my wife, Karen, and we're the major topic today is going to be vaccines, a slightly different topic than before. But I want to start out by reminding people that every week the first caller, and we love call-in questions, and you can call in at 505-424-4550. The first call-in questioner gets a $15 gift certificate at Joe's Dining. Now, I have one little news item that relates back to two previous shows, one in January and the one last week. And last week's show having to do with dissolving calcium deposits and primarily in spinal stenosis. The patient that was on the show in January about her Crohn's disease, which has disappeared, was talking to me, and I was discovering that that she was also having a problem with a calcium, a bone spur, okay, and bone spur in her back, and she had heard our show last week and thought, well, maybe I could do that same thing to treat the bone spur. And I thought, well, at least I can show her and her family how to do it, so that because I thought it'd probably take 4 or 5 months for a solid bone spur to be melted down, but at least I would start it and show them how to do it, and then they could continue with the treatment. So during this past week, I did one treatment with the DMSO ascorbic acid combination on the area of the back where the pain was, where the bone spur was. And I thought, okay, well, this is good. Then they're going to move away, when they get to their new place, then over the coming months, they'll have a good chance of making it disappear. But the next day, she reported to me that she was debating between saying it's all gone or there's just a little bit left and it may need one more treatment. So that was a very positive result.
And this was something you could actually feel, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
So
I mean, she was she was saying that it had gotten worse over past weeks, and it was really, really bothering her a lot over the previous week. It's sort of had always been there for years, but it was getting to the point where it was a major factor. So, now, vaccines, I've devoted maybe two or three shows over the past year to vaccines. And one thing that almost everybody would agree with is that vaccines are a very contentious issue. Problem is, very few discussions or studies do a whole lot to bring the issue to any conclusion. It continues to be, and probably will continue to be, a very contentious issue for a long time. The anti-vaccine people pick apart the ingredients in the vaccines, demonstrating how they're dangerous, demonstrate strong links to autism and cancer, point out the conflicts of interest in the advisory boards, that determine the federal vaccine recommendations. They acknowledge that there is an antibody response to many vaccines that could play a part in the resistance disease, but they claim, and this is important, they claim that the overall health of the country is diminished by vaccinations. Now, the pro-vaccine people admit that some people are harmed or even killed by vaccines, but they claim that, after all, disease is a nasty business. And the positive effects in preventing disease is much greater than the problems that result. So, and catch this, the overall health of the country is greatly improved by vaccines.
So basically, there's some collateral damage that they just accept.
Right, right. And they acknowledge this. Yeah. And the debate is over how many people, how much, mm-hmm. whether it's underreported or they have the correct numbers.
And when we talk about vaccines, you know, we usually think about children, vaccines in children.
Right. These are the ones who are mandated mm-hmm. in order to attend school.
But I wonder about our listeners, how many parents of young children are actually listening to this show. So it would also be true of the vaccines you get for other things, right?
Oh, right.
And like shingles or right. the flu.
Pneumonia. Right. And these are all, the adult vaccines are almost universally optional, except in some cases, they're required to attend other schools, you know, for adults, like, you know, the colleges and universities.
Well, there might be hospital workers.
A hospital, they might be required, not by law, but by policy of their employer. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult for average people who are not willing to spend, you know, months and months of their spare time sorting it all out to come to any really good conclusion. And what you really need to do is find some common ground that can get you out of the gray area.
Yeah, you could get totally lost in all the details. And
right, right. Of the claims and the counterclaims. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the claim by both sides that they generally improve the health, you know, of the whole country, either the anti-vaccine people say you would improve the health by not vaccinating, or the pro-vaccination people would claim you improve the overall health, not the specific disease, you know, not the number of flu cases, the number of polio cases, or the number of pertussis cases.
Yeah, when you hear on the news, it's always good for your health.
Right.
To make sure your vaccines are all up to date. We hear that over and over and over again.
So the overall health is a point where they could both agree. So doing studies to compare the overall health of the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated would seem to be the gold standard. Now, in 2012, and so this is coming clear, becoming clearer to a lot of people. And in 2012, there was some congressional testimony. And there was officials from the CDC testifying before Congress. And there was a representative, Bill Posey, got his 5 or 10 minutes to question the CDC representatives. And there was a Colleen Boyle up there as a representative of the CDC answering questions. So Representative Posey asked the question, have you ever compared the vaccinated versus, you know, and the unvaccinated? And Colleen Boyle, Dr. Boyle, you know, sort of danced around the question for about 2 minutes. And so he repeated the question. You know, sort of cornered her verbally, and then she stated the following. And this is not a paraphrase, this is word for word. We have not studied vaccinated versus unvaccinated.
Hmm.
Hmm. Yes, that's my response too. This is
that would
the study.
Be like a no-brainer.
Right. Right. And so how come highly educated highly intelligent, highly paid employees at the CDC, the FDA, the Institute of Health, Institute of Medicine, et cetera, come to work, you know, 5 days a week, 40 hours a week, and nobody in the past 60 years since we started vaccinating for polio could figure out that this is the study we need to do.
Hmm. Well, they're just good workers doing what they're instructed to do, right?
Well, I think there might be more to it than that. But for right now, we're going to go to a break. And I'm going to remind people, in case you have a question, to call in. It's 505-424-4550. This is Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Oriental Medicine, and welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine. I'm here in the studio with my wife, Karen, and we're discussing the comparison of vaccinated groups of people versus unvaccinated groups.
So you didn't think it was just good workers at the CDC that were just following the protocol? You think there was more to it than that?
Well, I think I think that if you remember my show from about 5 or 6 weeks ago, which I did on the history of polio and the polio vaccine, the rollout of the polio vaccine had so many horrendous problems and horrendous results, dramatic increases, including dramatic increases in the incidence of polio, that with severe consequences, that if they'd done this kind of study back in 1954, 55, the late 1950s, there is a real possibility that there would be no more vaccines. So maybe that sort of has had an effect in subsequent decades. And really what Dr. Boyle said in congressional testimony, we have not studied vaccinated versus unvaccinated, is true. That the federal government, whether it's the CDC, the FDA, National Institutes of Health, et cetera, have not done this kind of study. But other people have. The first study that I want to point out is actually done through the University of Hong Kong, and it was published in 2012. And here's the title. You know, the title as written down by the technical scientists. It says, "Increased risk of non-influenza respiratory virus infections associated with receipt of inactivated influenza vaccine." Now, to translate that to plain English for you, it says that if you get the flu vaccine, you're much more likely to get other respiratory diseases. And their summary doesn't discuss much about the specifics, but if you get the whole you get the whole study, the whole data in front of you, then you discover that the numbers are that if you compared the seasonal flu that they were being vaccinated for, it was roughly in the same ratio as the number of participants for both placebo and vaccinated. And remember, these people, this was a true placebo. They didn't know whether they got the placebo or the vaccine, and they didn't make that choice. But it was roughly the same. So, but when you look for, there was an other kind of flu that was not vaccinated for. And that particular kind of flu, there was 58 people in the vaccinated group that got this other type of flu, but nobody in the placebo group got it. Okay? Then we go to other, you know, non-flu respiratory viruses, rhinoviruses. So that's a common cold. 230 from the vaccinated group got the rhinovirus, 59 from the placebo. And now the Coxsackie virus, or the echovirus, 160 from the vaccinated and none from the placebo. Other respiratory viruses, 97 for the vaccinated and 29 for the placebo. Total other viruses, 487 to 88, more on the vaccinated side than the unvaccinated side. So this was a factor of when you count for the number of participants. Some of the reviews said 5.5, but that's just the raw numbers. When you adjust for the number of participants on each side, it's a factor of about 4.4.
Did they look at other things too in the children's lives, or was it just
no?
Because so everything else was pretty much consistent.
Well, because it was randomized, because they were randomly chosen.
Okay.
And they didn't know, and the doctors didn't, you know. Mm-hmm. I think the patients didn't know, but the doctors knew.
Mm-hmm.
That they didn't pay as much test. They presumed that the randomization would take care. I didn't read anything about how they were matched.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
But this was a Hong Kong study, and probably their lifestyle is
homogeneous.
Yeah, it's probably more similar than here, okay. I would think.
But also,
like their diet's probably pretty much the same.
One of the rationales for not doing the vaccinated versus unvaccinated study that you consistently read from the pro-vaccine people is that such a study would be unethical, to deprive people of what we know to be a very positive effect on their health. But now, this study is the first of many that will show that it wouldn't be unethical to do that study, because in the end, they end up getting, in this case, this study says 4.4 times the respiratory diseases when they were being given a vaccine for a respiratory illness.
Well, the unethical argument sort of breaks down too when you realize there are populations who are by choice unvaccinated.
Right.
So it's not like a doctor would be recommending it.
Right. And there's, for instance, the Amish. There's a similar result with Amish where, and these are people by choice do not vaccinate. There's a study in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, 19,500 people, 500 children, certainly a large number. And it was four children found with autism, one in 4,875. And the one was exposed to high levels of mercury from a power plant, and the other three had gotten vaccines before they joined the Amish community, and two of them were adopted in.
So, yeah, that's what I was guessing.
And there's two other Amish studies. Which,
so in the Amish population, the autism is way, way low compared to the rest of
right. There's
society.
Another study in northeastern Ohio of Amish in northeastern Ohio.
That's where I'm from, by the way.
1 in 10,000 diagnosed with autism. And this compares with 1 in 100 at the time that this article was written, 1 in 100 in the rest of the country.
Wow.
And then there's the Home First Health Services statistics from Northern Illinois, where they have this particular medical group has about 35,000 patients. And out of those 35,000 children, out of those, none are diagnosed with autism.
And it can't be because they eat such a great diet, because I'm from that culture, and I mean, it's peanut butter pie, it's noodles, it's, I mean, it is high sugar, high carbohydrate diet. It is not anything we think of as being healthy. And a lot of them do use pesticides on their mm-hmm. on their gardens. So they're not even big organic gardeners. So
okay. Well, we're going to go to a break, and we'll come back with more about these groups of vaccinated versus unvaccinated. This is Daniel Kopp, Doctor of Oriental Medicine, and welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine. I'm here in the studio with my wife, Karen, and we're discussing comparing vaccinated versus unvaccinated populations. One more. I'd mentioned the Home First Health Services of Northern Illinois and the 0 out of 35,000 with autism. but there's one more thing about Home First Health Services. Asthma rates are so low, and asthma is something that keeps coming up over and over again in the discussion of vaccinated versus unvaccinated. The asthma rates are so low that the insurance giant Blue Cross Blue Shield's computer systems flagged the issue. So Blue Cross Blue Shield actually contacted Home First, inquiring on how could this be? You know, how can your asthma rates be so low? And there was actually, when this became public information, there was a legislator in the Illinois State House that proposed a law to do a study to figure out how could these people be so healthy? So there's a computer doing the analysis on this one. You know, no partisan person looking at the data, just a computer in this particular case. Now, while we were talking just before the break, Karen was talking about peanuts, and we were looking at a reference on one of the studies that I got here. And Karen, just, you know.
Oh, the Amish study. I was noticing that, it made a reference to peanut allergies.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, anybody with kids knows that, like, even some schools have banned putting peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in your kids' mm-hmm. lunch, because there's so many kids who are so, so allergic to it. But among these Amish kids, none of them had peanut allergies. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's like, they eat more peanut butter probably. I know, like I said, I know this culture very well. They eat more peanut butter than probably any other culture. The peanut butter pie is like the standard thing. Uh-huh. And I'm sure that's the kids' favorite.
But there's another factor that relates to vaccines, because a lot of the vaccines, some of the ingredients are deemed proprietary information. And one of the things that is not just occasionally, but more frequent, you know, not in all vaccines, but definitely a significant portion, is peanut oil. And it's not listed on the ingredients.
So it's actually in the vaccine. So when kids are getting vaccinated, they're getting peanut oil.
If the oil contains any significant levels of, let's say, typically the proteins are what triggers the allergic reaction. Mm-hmm. So if that oil contains a significant enough quantity of the proteins, it could trigger that peanut allergic reaction.
Is that true also of eggs? Because I know for a while there, people who were allergic to eggs, they said, you know, they needed to tell their doctors before they got a vaccine. Is that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Eggs are frequently, eggs are more frequently on the list of ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
But the next, I want to go to another study. And this study is done in New Zealand, 1992. And this was a study that involved just under 500 children from 245 different families, 226 vaccinated, 269 unvaccinated. And the results overwhelmingly showed that the unvaccinated children suffer far less from chronic childhood conditions than vaccinated children. So in the first study, we're going for respiratory diseases, which are sort of temporary, and you'd say, well, maybe that, you know, those upper respiratory diseases don't make that much difference. So what about the chronic conditions? Well, this study addresses more of the chronic childhood conditions. And they also wanted to make sure that they knew that, that breastfeeding and the age of weaning from breastfeeding can make a significant difference in the overall health. So they wanted to make sure that that wasn't skewing the results. And so they included that as part of the, you know, part of the study information. And the percentage of breastfed was universally high and very similar in both cases, not statistically different. And the age of weaning was also the same. So we ruled that out because some people might think, oh, those people that don't vaccinate are thinking more about the health. So they might be more inclined to breastfeed and, you know, have a later age of weaning. But this was statistically insignificant in the data. Then you go to the data and remember asthma. Asthma keeps coming up over and over in these vaccinated versus unvaccinated studies. Even though the vaccinated had fewer, they had by a factor of four more. They had fewer children in the study, but they had by a factor of four more asthma cases, 34 to 8. So by percentage, it's a factor of 5. Eczema, a factor of 2. And that was the lowest on the list, actually the second lowest. Persistent ear infections, 4 times higher in the vaccinated. Grommets, now this is a New Zealand term. This is putting a tube in the ear to give it some ventilation. Wow. When you get persistent infections,
yeah.
9 times higher in the vaccinated. Tonsillitis, 10 times higher. Tonsillectomy was something where I can't quote a factor because there was 12 cases in the vaccinated, but 0 in the unvaccinated. Apnea, 4 times. Hyperactivity, 3 times higher. And these are all higher in the vaccinated children. Now, diabetes was a wash, 0 on both sides. Epilepsy, 4 cases in the vaccinated and none in the unvaccinated. Slow development of motor skills, that was only 1.5 times higher in the vaccinated children. But there was none of these conditions that were looked for that were higher by percentage in the unvaccinated. There was another study also in New Zealand. It was an earlier study in 1977 where they were only looking at asthma. The 23 children received no DPT or polio immunizations, which was pretty much all they were getting back in 1977, had no recorded asthma episodes or consultations for asthma or other allergic illness before the age of 10 years. In the immunized children, 23.1% had asthma episodes, 22.5% asthma consultations, and 30% consultations for other allergic illness. So once again, you see allergies, asthma come up big time in the comparisons of vaccinated and unvaccinated. And now the next study is...
So would those mostly be like immune, like a weakened immune system? Would that account for it?
Or a deranged immune system, you know, in possibly overactive in a wrong way.
Oh, so allergies, it's like maybe over.
Right, it's attacking something that maybe doesn't need to be attacked.
Like an autoimmune almost.
Almost, yeah. 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 Okay. But an off-center immune system, something that maybe doesn't really protect you, give you really good immunity, but maybe attacks other things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this sort of raises a question. What about... we've seen some small studies and,
that last study you reported, what was the sample size for that? Do you
remember? Last one was 1200 and some people,
yeah,
some
so
children now, but then
huge,
you think, well, what about some bigger studies?
Worthwhile. Yeah.
You know, so here's a bigger study and with pretty much the same results. This is published in 2000 and, this is, I believe, a 2011 study in Germany.
Well, that's better because, you know, studies from, you know, what was the last one?
New Zealand, both of them.
1970.
77 and 92.
So I suppose most people who are strong supporters of vaccines would probably say, well, the vaccine is very different now than it was in 1972.
Right.
You know, so those older studies could easily be dismissed.
Right.
But one in 2011, that's pretty
right.
current.
1992 is a big jump forward, but 2011
yeah.
is right up there with current, you know, mm-hmm. vaccine procedures yeah. and methods for production. And this one was done by... They went out and they advertised for people that wanted to be included in the study. Mm. Okay. And
this is New Zealand again.
No, this is Germany.
Germany.
Okay.
Oh,
this
okay.
is 2011.
All right.
And they got about 8,000 people. Now, to his credit, the person that did this study specifically tried to recruit people from autism groups so that his study results came up about even in autism, probably because he specifically wanted to include autism groups in the study. So he was recruiting non-vaccinated. So he probably got more than his share of non-vaccinated autistic children.
Hmm.
But when you go for all the other diseases, allergies, two times the rate, and they were all higher in the vaccinated arm of the study. They were compared against a pre-existing 17,000 child compilation from the general population. Two times higher in allergies, seven times higher in asthma. Remember, asthma always comes up.
Hmm.
Neurodermatitis, another allergic condition, two times as high. Herpes infections, 64 times as high. Ear infections, five times. Hay fever, four times. Hyperactivity, four times. Scoliosis, 10 times. Epilepsy and seizures, 12 times. Migraine headaches, twice. Thyroid disease, 17 times. And diabetes was the one case where it was dead even. 0.1% in both arms.
Interesting.
And we're going to go now to a break, and we'll come back with more on this German study. This is Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Oriental Medicine, and welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine. I'm here in the studio with my wife, Karen, and we're comparing vaccinated versus unvaccinated and discovering over and over again that the unvaccinated end up testing out healthier than the vaccinated groups.
Well, before we get back to that, though... We just need to remind people they can call in, and the number is 424-4550, and we do have a $15 gift certificate available for Joe's Dining. Well, one of the thoughts I had about this study, you know, and I mean, it's important to think very critically about these things. So I could say if they were testing kids whose parents didn't want them to be vaccinated, there were probably other factors in that group of kids too, because the parents I know who don't have their kids vaccinated are also pretty careful about serving healthy foods, organic. They're often hang out at the farmer's market.
Right, they're not taking their kids out for fast food.
No, they're not eating at McDonald's. They're not doing all that kind of stuff. So I'd say, you know, to think critically about studies like this, you'd have to say, well, maybe there were some other factors, and maybe it wasn't right. just the vaccine that
right.
that made kids
I think
unhealthy.
Maybe that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why, remember, the first study, the Hong mm-hmm. Kong study, was placebo-controlled and blind to the patients and family.
Mm-hmm. That's a better way to
and so
isolate.
In
this.
That case, they didn't get to self-select as mm-hmm. being vaccinated or non-vaccinated, mm-hmm. and the results were, you know, a little bit diminished from, let's say, the German study.
The German study is probably more. I mean, Germany is probably more like the population United States than mm-hmm. Hong Kong would be.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so some of the things in the German study, you know, 64 times as much herpes virus are probably, you know, were beyond the 4.4, you know, if you averaged all these out, they're probably a little bit, the number of diseases are probably a little bit higher in as a ratio compared to the, you know, in the vaccinated as opposed to the unvaccinated than they were in the Hong Kong study. But so there's, that probably makes up about maybe a quarter of the difference, you know, or I mean, makes up the difference between the number that you would get from the German study and the New Zealand study and the, what you get from the Hong Kong study, where that doesn't come into play. Mm-hmm. But still, the Hong Kong study was 4.4 times the respiratory diseases. Hmm. Now, I do want to read something from the bottom of the article on the German study. Now, this is written by the author that's reviewing the study, not the people that wrote the study. Now, half of the U.S. children suffer from chronic diseases and disorders, and 21% are developmentally disabled. Yet the public health system always uses the sacred mantra, vaccine-preventable diseases, when referring to their top public health achievement of mass vaccinations. I think we should be talking more in terms of preventable vaccine-induced diseases, which, you know, addresses these exact graphs that we're talking about. You know, for instance, the vaccine isn't about ear infections, and it's not about allergies and asthma and chronic bronchitis. It's not about epilepsy and migraines. But when those things rise in a vaccinated group, that would have to be called a vaccine, you know, a preventable vaccine-induced disease.
Well, it certainly would warrant more investigation. There's a graph here, and I mean, it is just amazing to see this on a graph. And I mean, it's like, it's ridiculous.
Right. I mean, you'd look at this graph and run the other way from anyone carrying a syringe.
I mean, you have to see there's absolutely something going on here, whether it's vaccines or not. You would think that maybe it's a healthy lifestyle and healthy eating. You'd think at the very least they'd want to know that.
Right. And so, you know, but the problem is maybe, well, we'll get back to it at the very end, but there's one more study, one more study in Africa. And there was a person that did some original studies in the United States, and they sent him to Africa, and it was actually in England is where he did his studies. And he found a prevalence of 4.1 per 10,000, 1 in 2,400 in England in 1966.
So with autism.
In autism, yeah. Mm-hmm. In 1966 in Middlesex County, England. So they sent him to Africa, and he wanted to do the same kind of study. And what he found was a rate of 1 in 145, but he was only looking at the disabled children, right? Which is a special population where you would expect to find a lot of autism. He expected to see 1 in 20. So, but when you take these same Africans and you bring them to the United States, you'd say, well, maybe they're genetically resistant to mm-hmm. becoming autistic. But you take the same Africans and you bring them to the United States, and their rates come right up to the, you know, to the rates of the surrounding population in the United States, except in some cases, like the Somalis of Minnesota, they rise to five times the level of the surrounding
population. The Somalis of Minnesota?
The Somalis have a large concentration of immigrants
to
Minnesota.
I'll have to Google that one.
and they, you know, there's probably some vitamin D issues because of the dark skin in a northern climate. But, you know, want to go back to the idea as sort of a concluding statement, that remember those employees of the, you know, those PhD, MD employees of the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, the, you know, the FDA, the Institute of Medicine, our national experts who are supposed to, you know, lead us in the right direction. And since the first vaccine rollout in about 1954 until now, which is exactly 60 years, for 60 years, they've come in to work every day and neglected to notice that maybe they ought to do a study of the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. Now, there have been studies, but they've never been commissioned, paid for by large national organizations. They've been commissioned and done by smaller places, schools, universities, individuals. And many times at their own expense. And so I think we're out of time here. We got to close it up. I want to thank all the listeners for listening in. I want to thank Kieran for keeping it conversational.